It's Celebrity Time on WRSV. Time for Chicagoland's longest-running live remote talk show, sent your way each weeknight. Stay tuned for comments from interesting people with something to say on subjects you want to hear about. And now to the beautiful main dining room of Jimmy Wong's North.
I almost started the show off one night by saying Ohio Gazayamas, which is Japanese, and that would have been, we'd have had to, you know, practically start it all over if I would have done that. But I do know that our theme song is China Nights, and that means we're ready for another week of Del Clark and Celebrity Time here at Jimmy Wong's North Restaurant, Lincoln and Peterson Avenue, where we hold forth nightly from 7 until 8 o'clock. We're also with you every morning from 6 until 9 on the Wake Up with Del Clark radio program. And yeah, it gets early fast. And I never knew where the night went until I started doing a morning radio show, and I found out it goes in a hurry. Anyway, we'd like to invite you to join us every evening at 7 as often as you can. Also, every morning as often as you can from 6 to 9. We play a lot of bright music to keep you wide awake and not let you go back to sleep. Nothing that'll suggest that your eardrums would have to be replaced. There's Ted, the new... How's the new baby? 7 weeks old this week. No? It's 1 month and 4 days. I had 3 weeks too old. Well, that's the way it goes. One of my cats had kittens at dinner time tonight, too. Four of them, yeah. Well, it's not my kid. It's my little girl's cat. And they had four kittens. Right at dinner time. You know, dinner, the chicken and the corn on the cob is already, and what the cat has kittens. That's the case of better... that's bad timing on that case of that cat. But anyway, that's what happened. That female voice you hear in the background belongs to Char Stengel, our Char Stengel gal. Lovely femme fatale from Des Plaines Way. And she is our gal Friday. We'll be talking with people here in the dining room and awarding our fortune flower for the night. No fortune flower tonight? Oh, Eichling's is away for us. Somebody ought to tell me these things before I shoot my big mouth off on the air. Well, normally, see what happens. Dorothy Jordan is laughing. But what normally happens is that... we have from Eichling Flowers every night, they send over a corsage or something like that. And then we give it to some lucky lady in the dining room. But they're away for a month. Well, they deserve it. They work very hard, and they deserve a vacation, by golly, to get away from it all and have some fun and forget about flowers for a while. But they'll be back in August, and then we'll have fortune flowers to award again. The voice you just heard hee-hawing in the background was that of... one of Chicagoland's loveliest and most talented actresses by the name of Dorothy Jordan.
I thank you for that.
Nice to have you, Dorothy. It's a real chic-looking slack outfit you're wearing tonight.
Thank you very much, love. Twice. Very nice to be here.
Oh, well, if I keep saying nice things, will you keep saying thank you?
Mm-hmm. I'll keep it up and keep it up. I wouldn't want to discourage you.
Dorothy is kind of the new guard in radio these days, and we wanted to talk also about the old guard, about the days of the Lone Ranger. And things like that.
Wow.
And Chuck Shaden, who is the executive editor of one of Chicagoland's largest newspaper groups, the Press Reporter Journal newspaper group, and has, as I almost would say, it's not just a hobby, it's kind of whatever you call I put my foot in it because I can't think of what I wanted to say. Kind of a co-profession, because you almost make a business out of the study of what was and radio yesterday, don't you?
Good old radio, right. And aren't you going to comment about my slack suit?
Listen, don't be jealous.
I got to say this. I didn't notice. I mean, they look great, but somehow I only notice what women are wearing or not. And
terrific.
Seldom do I notice what
my
men are wearing.
My clothes are from the 30s and the early 40s to go along with my interest in good old radio.
Well, I got to tell you, I like that shirt very much. Is that better?
Thank you.
Well, now I have to tell you this, because I've talked with Chuck about this, that Eric Hansen, who is a very fine tailor, you do business with him and have some very fine clothes from Eric Hansen of Copenhagen.
Right.
So that proves you have excellent taste in clothes.
Thank you.
Do you really try to... Are you kind of stuck in the 1930, 1940
era? Yeah, I was born in 1934, and I never left it, I think.
Well, I think maybe if you never left it, I'll forgive you for being born in 1934.
I think it maybe was more exciting. You know, there were those days of the oaken cockpit airplane, for one thing, you know, and you could fly with a silver scarf around your neck. And
trailing in the breeze.
Oh, of course. And like the Red Baron, that's right, Char.
Of course.
And
Dick Powell was only 21 years old then, too, I think.
Dick Powell was never 21.
He was always 21.
He was born 40.
No, Dick Powell?
Dick Powell.
No, well, he sang in a band in those days.
Forever, and Dick Powell did all those Busby Berkeley musicals, you know, from Paramount and Warner Brothers in the early 30s. You remember the Vitaphone pictures with Ruby Keeler and Dick Powell?
I remember hearing about them.
Well, I don't even remember hearing, but you must be looking back. You were born in 34.
Dell gets up to do a program at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he doesn't watch the oldies on TV.
Late,
10:30, you
think. That's right. Once the news is over, I'm in Snoozeville.
Right.
Otherwise, you don't make sense at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I don't make sense at 6 anyway, but...
Well, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, you gotta listen some morning.
If I'm ever up.
Chuck, you know, I was kind of a sad thing. A month or so ago, MGM auctioned off many of their old props. And this, as an artist, I was never in an MGM movie. I was a great fan. But it kind of got me here. You keep thinking, they ought to keep them. I don't know why.
Well, there ought to be a museum or something for
those
things.
Well, there is. There's a movement on to have a Hollywood museum. And Debbie Reynolds is behind this.
No kidding.
And she was at the MGM auction, and she and her agents were doing a lot of bidding for these things. But they didn't get everything, obviously. MGM sold to an auctioneer all of their material for, I think, $1.5 million. And he conducted the auction and sold it for $10 million.
Oh, my God.
Somebody bought the hull of the Bounty.
Yes.
You know, from Mutiny on the Bounty.
Of course.
And I don't even remember exactly what that went for, something like $2,500.
Judy Garland's red slippers from Wizard went for $14,000.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
$14,000. For a little pair of red slippers.
But you see that...
The magic shows, red slippers.
Well, they're magic.
The value to people today of these great things that they remember from the past.
Well, you know, Chuck, I think today we are all in so many different areas losing every heritage and every hold we have on the past that maybe this business of being willing to pay so much for a pair of magic red slippers plays back to that, do you suppose?
Well, I don't know if the average person would be willing to pay 14 or 15 for those things, but I think that
the average
guy
can have it.
Well, but I'm talking, let's rob a bank or something, but I think that the average person can appreciate the fact that Judy Garland's red shoes from The Wizard of Oz are worth $14,000 or $15,000, because anyone who has ever seen The Wizard of Oz is, generally speaking, loves that picture and the memories that go with it. And a lot of people I know will say, I remember the first time I saw that. I was a little kid. My dad took me in and I saw a witch. It was scary, you know, and that hurricane or the tornado or what have you. It was really exciting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it today and it's still as exciting as it was. And
I still think it's exciting, but then, of course, I'll never grow up. I've already decided that.
You're only, 21 today?
I love you, too.
Chuck, what is the... do you think that a performer worked in a more romantic atmosphere when he worked on the MGM lot or the Paramount lot in the 30s, or went down to Merchandise Mart or the Wrigley Building to do a network radio soap opera? Do you think that was more romantic for the performer than the type of thing that most of us do today?
I don't know if it was... if they considered it to be more romantic, because most of the people who jumped from the Merchandise Mart to the Wrigley Building to the Tribune Tower doing the old radio things, they were hustling to make a dollar. But it wasn't so commercial as it is today. When you talk to some of these radio performers from the past who were involved in the Chicago radio, let's say, in the 30s and the very early 40s, they say, we really hustled, we moved, we had to get from here to there. They'd do Ma Perkins in the morning at the Mart, and they'd come over to the Wrigley Building, and they'd do Life Can Be Beautiful, LCBB, you know, is what they used to call it.
Oh, what?
LCBB.
What in the world was
Life
that?
Life Can Be Beautiful.
Life Can Be Beautiful,
LCBB.
LCBB. See, that was known in the trade as LCBB. And then they'd jump over to Tribune Tower, and they'd do Jack Armstrong or Captain Midnight, and back to somebody do a few commercials. And it was a job to them. But it was far more romantic, if you want to use that word, to the listeners The people who stayed at home and listened to the radio were enchanted by the so-called magic of radio, whereas today nobody, I don't think, no one is enchanted by the magic of television, you know.
Well, just, Chuck, you know, radio was so fantastic because it left something to the imagination.
Right. Absolutely.
It was so vivid, and every sound effect was so real.
Absolutely.
And the writing was so much better than it is today. It moved, it happened, you heard it, and you had this marvelous ability to visualize these people as you wanted them to be.
Well, that's exactly right.
And television robs us all of that.
Right.
It has this dimension which limits our imagination.
Well, one person somewhere is saying, this is what this looks like. Now, you have your own mind's eye view or your own conception of Fibber McGee's home and the closet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can remember when somebody knocked on the door, and Fibber opened, the bell rang, you know, and Fibber opened the door and the old timer would come in, or Teeny or whoever would be there. They'd come in and you can visualize it. You know today exactly how McGee's house looked, where the hallway was, where the closet was located, the stairway where Molly went so that Teeny could come in.
Of course.
They tried to do it on television and it died.
Well, that limited this because everybody's mind's eye is different.
Right.
Every imagination would give each character different facets, you know. And so when you try to get one person and one set or a group of people, but each one, you know, embodying all these things in one set, it's going to disappoint everyone. It can't happen. I think it is such a too bad thing that radio is no longer the creative kind of medium that it was, because it's robbed us all.
Can I suggest one thing that has happened within the last year in radio that is interesting to me, and that it's the radio commercial. Instead of the announcer coming on and saying, buy Blotz cheese, you've got, and this is, Dorothy, where you make your living, I know, 59 what? Seconds to act out a little playlet of why you should buy Blotz cheese.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's coming, you have to have a sound effects man at Universal when you record. You have to have the same type of thing that you had to have in the old days of radio.
Yes, and you know, I know this is true in television, Del. I don't know if it's true in radio. But when I was working on the coast, the last time I was out there, I was talking to an engineer. I was working at the studio where they do the Bonanza epic, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, you know, how much more money is spent on each commercial than is spent on a full segment for Bonanza? And how much more perfectionism there is? Because when you're doing a show segment, you have one run through and one take, and that's it, baby, unless somebody falls on his face. In which case, they'll go back and redo a little bit to fill in, but there is not the time, there is not the money, and there is not the care spent on the features, at least on the coast, according to this man, that there is spent on commercials. So is it any wonder that the commercials are better than the shows?
Well, consider this, too. They rerun the shows, but they seldom rerun the commercials.
I don't say that. You're killing me.
That's where the money is in reruns?
I rerun
well, I know, but as soon a show may become outdated. You're talking about the residuals on the commercials.
That's how we all
live. But the show, if it becomes outdated, it still continues. It goes on as long as Perry Mason. You know, Perry Mason's been off the network for 12 years, I think, and they're still running them in Chicago.
It moves to a different
But a commercial, as soon as a commercial is outdated, it's through, really.
Well,
they may take a piece of it or something like that, but
yeah,
essentially it's through.
It is no longer pertinent to selling that product.
Right,
as soon as
right.
product innovations have right. reached beyond the limits of that commercial, or as soon as the client feels that commercial has done its selling job and can no longer sell his product for whatever reason, then he'll produce a new one. But, of course, the money situation, the tight money situation being what it is right now, a whole lot of commercials are being dredged up from nowhere that have been taken off the air and they're being put back on, you know. And if you're lucky enough to be on one of those, you'll get rich.
Chuck, how do you think the current soap opera on TV compares with the old radio soap opera?
Well, I think that they're pretty much alike. as far as the continuity of the program is concerned, you know, you can. I never watch the TV soap operas. My wife will occasionally turn one on, and she says 3 months ago she turned on As the World Turns, and it hasn't. You know,
it hasn't turned in years
on that show. Nothing has really changed. Or as one woman went through. The delivery of a baby, it took her 4 weeks or something like that. And
poor woman.
Yeah.
It's got to be the record of all time.
Well, Chuck, could I ask you this? You know, as I remember the soaps, and I was a little girl, you know, they were very real to me. But as I remember them, and from what I've heard, little pieces of them that I've heard on the air, you know, the actual thing, the writing was so real and so magnificent and so now, so immediate. And the acting and the whole thing, the sound effects, the whole business, made it so personal, so immediate, that I can almost not compare the whole thing with the soaps that I have seen on television. Now, I've not seen that many. I'm never at home.
Are you saying that they are not immediate? They are not now? They are not real?
I'm saying they're not immediate. I'm saying they are contrived from what I have seen. I can only base it on what I've seen, Del, and it hasn't been that much. Well, I think they're contrived as far as the creation of them is concerned. I think they're hackneyed. I think they're badly acted. And I think people support them in terms of clients. Simply because they grab a certain percentage of the audience, and that percentage is very often the mother or mother-in-law who is moving in with somebody or is living with them and who has nothing else to do, as the game shows do, but sit there and look at this thing, and then they become all embroiled in it, you know, and whether it's real or not.
I got hooked on a couple of them myself.
Did you really?
Yeah, sure, you know.
Maybe I just haven't seen enough of them.
Yeah. What, Dark Shadows? That's the one with
Dark
the,
Shadows,
that's
I didn't
the horror.
Vampire bit
yeah.
and all that stuff.
I didn't
yeah.
see Dark Shadows. I apologize. Yeah.
They made a horror movie soap opera is what they did with all the vampire characters.
Yeah, it's the same.
I would kind of take exception.
The kids love that. The kids watch that. 3:30, I think it's on. Or 3:00
they almost have
and
to
they race
dismiss
school
early, right?
You know, the thing I really like, of course it's on Saturday, so it doesn't really count, but on Saturday morning, you know, the cartoons, I know they're written for adults. Saturday and Sunday mornings. They're not written for children.
They're
the new
and improved editions, too, because they got all the crime and violence taken out because we adults can't stand it.
Yeah, but you know, the
kids can.
The
we
best
can.
Cartoons that are on TV, I think Ray Rayner puts this on his program. And these are the cartoons from Walter Lantz and Disney and some of those things. They were made in the 40s during the war, and they're great. My kids have got this thing on. I'm getting ready to go to the office. I can't get away from there. They're funny. They do takeoffs on the movie stars. You know, you can look on there and see Bing Crosby,
The acting is so beautiful. The impersonations are fantastic.
Oh, they're perfect,
clever. Yeah, they're really so clever.
And today, you go to the show, you know, and you see Roadrunner or the Pink Panther.
And all
you
ever
do
is
insane, you know.
Yeah. I think, Dorothy, I take exception with one thing you said about the soapers today, and that's that I like the character of acting, or the caliber of acting, at least the ones I've seen, where I know that these youngsters, kids, actors, grown-ups, whoever it happens to be, have to learn a new script every day, rehearse it, and do it.
Well, all right, but excuses, you know, if you're going to be a professional, you're going to be a professional. Learn your trade someplace else and then do it.
You
don't
get find them believable as
no,
characters?
No, not what I've seen, but I've seen very little.
Do you think the soap opera today is the summer stock of television? Do you think that they're breaking in a lot of people on there?
Well, in terms of apprenticeship, yes. You have to learn someplace to play a camera, but you should know your craft in terms of making a character believable before you become involved with a camera, I feel.
Aren't they bringing back a lot of, as they call them, the greats of the silver screen, but it's really an actor or an actress on the...
Kids.
On the other side of I love the movies and I love the movie stars, so I was going to be gentler.
On the other side of the
peak of stardom, you know. Didn't Dana Andrews get involved in one of these things? And,
yes, she did.
Some of these people, I can't think offhand,
more
but a number
more
of them.
Joan Bennett. That I know are becoming involved with these things and also with commercials who at one time would not have any part of it. And I must tell you that I'm not an authority in this area. I've only seen a couple of these things, because usually I'm out either working or peddling, one or the other, you know. And so I'm not at home to look at them. And the ones I have seen have been notoriously awful, extremely bad, and
well,
have made shivers run up and
that,
down
yeah.
my back, and have had me cringing in a chair thinking, oh my, and the whole world is seeing this, you know. But there may be some very good ones on, and I just don't know about it. I've only seen a couple, and I make a whole broad generalization based on that.
Chuck, what do you think of the caliber of the radio commercial today? Do you think, do you like the dramatic things that are happening?
Oh, yeah,
there?
Very yeah. much, yeah. I think it's almost a complete reversal now. Radio was the place for the greatest creativity for a great many years, especially from 1931 or so, from 29 really, you know, when the Depression, when the stock market took a dive in 29, the radio was tailor-made for people out of work. It was free entertainment. And from all the Depression years in the 30s and in the 40s right up to 1950, the radio offered the greatest amount of creativity. Then when television came in late 40s, you know, there were still some fairly decent programs being produced on radio, but
the television is a new toy and it superseded
everybody. I blocked out radio. I was like, threw a shade down, you know, forgot about radio. I couldn't care less about it. I went to that eye, and there were some pretty good things early.
Yes, but there were also a lot of horses running up and down, and I think we all looked at those to see what was going to happen next and ignored great things that were happening on the radio.
Oh, sure. Well, it's like the silent film. When the talkies came in, the silent film was a fantastic art form. It had achieved greatness, really. Some of those silent pictures in 1927, 26,
artwork.
They were beautiful. They were really great. When talkies came in, it's like they forgot everything they learned. They just went back to nothing, and those early talkies were so bad. I mean,
well,
let's face it, the jazz singer may have been a terrific turning point, but it was a bad movie. And some of those early talkies...
Standard.
Even by 1927, 28 standards, it was a bad movie.
I don't remember those.
I don't remember those either, but
you did research.
I did a little background on it, right.
There's a little theater on in West Los Angeles, out toward Beverly Hills, on Fairfax, that shows silent films. This is all they show, is silent films. And it's really quite a treat to go in there and watch, because these people really had to act. They had nothing but visuals to
right.
work with. There were no lines to carry them. There were no vocal sounds that they could make. It had to all register in the body or the face.
Yes.
Well, you can still see these things on educational TV in Chicago. I think one night a week, they about 10:30, they show these things. The timing is poor for me because we have a TV in our bedroom, you know. And I'm bad enough to stay awake with the dialogue going, and when there's just organ music,
and subtitles.
It's murder, you know.
Yeah.
But or you can hit the Museum of Science and Industry. You know, the Yesterday's Main Street.
Oh yeah.
You know, down
yeah.
there, they always have a Nickelodeon program for a nickel. They charge you a nickel, and you can go in and see a 8-minute flick. You know, and there's Fatty Arbuckle running across the screen, or the Gish sisters. Or
Gish sisters?
Lillian Gish.
Lillian yeah. and whom?
Dorothy Gish.
Who? Oh,
yeah.
Dorothy. Whom, who, huh?
Yeah.
You're thinking when they gave away, they gave away Gishes at the movies, you know, Bank Night and Free Gishes? Or
Oh, you hurt me, Chuck.
No, they used to sell them at a bazaar at $1 a Gish.
Oh, I think I'm going to leave, guys.
You know, we mentioned before about the commercials and a commercial being outdated. I listen to radio all the time, old radio, because I have a large collection of tapes.
How many shows do you think you have on tape, Chuck?
Well over 1,000.
Oh,
well over 1,000
fantastic.
Of the great old shows, you know. And there was a saint I listened to, Vincent Price as the saint, and it's sponsored by a glass company. The company made a bottler. How can I say this? They manufacture bottles.
Anchor Hockey?
All right.
It's okay. You can say the name.
Well, I realize that, but what I'm going to say is that they were very proud of the fact that they were introducing the new one-way bottles at the time. It was a program from about 47, and they were thrilled.
What is a one-way bottle?
You know, the disposable bottles.
Oh,
the ones
that pollute everything.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh. So now in 1970, you know, something like 23, 4 years later, there's a big movement on to get rid of these disposable bottles and use the return stuff again. And it's funny. To hear this whole business going a full circle. They're introducing a fantastic new bottle. Same thing in these old shows. You hear 9 out of 10 doctors smoke so-and-so.
Uh-huh. And I remember that slogan.
We're tobacco men, not medicine men, and all that business, you know.
Uh-huh.
And today, again, 9 out of 10 doctors have given up smoking.
Well, eventually, if you wait long enough, I think everything will go full circle. It's wonderful, it's lousy. I mean,
well,
you know.
Wire wheels came back.
They did.
Well, yes, that's true.
It's a big thing. Wire
wheels. The check I wrote last week came back.
Well, what about the one you wrote back in the great old 40s?
I never caught up with him, Dale. He changed his name.
Chuck, if you were to perhaps enumerate your favorite 5 radio programs of all time, off the top of your head, what would they be?
I would say Suspense. Not necessarily in this order, but Suspense was a terrific show, and they always had a great variety of actors. You could hear, one night you could hear Edward G. Robinson impersonating Edward G. Robinson on Suspense, so you could hear Cary Grant on A Lonely Road. You could hear Jeff Chandler. Any of these great actors in truly suspenseful stories, and I think Suspense was one of the really great radio shows, and in fact it lasted well into the 50s.
Yeah, I was going to say it was one of the last, that and Gunsmoke were a couple of the last radio shows to go on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I would say that The Shadow.
That means it was on just recently.
Yeah, I was never home otherwise.
No, I'd say that, sure, I'd say The Shadow was another goodie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because it really tested your imagination. You know, when Lamont Cranston clouded men's minds to become the Shadow, you knew that he was gone from that room, and you could see these crooks were moving around the room, and I hear him, "Where's the Shadow?" And he's laughing. Yeah. He was there. He was in there, and he clouded your mind,
there.
Too. You know what, do you remember his faithful companion? What
I
her
don't
name
remember
was?
His name. No, I don't
Keto.
Remember his name.
No. Margot Lane.
Oh, right.
Margot Lane.
Lousy memory I had.
Cranston,
you know, I remember
companion. And I think there was something, a little hanky-panky there or something, because she was always his
This is a family show, please.
That's right. Don't bring those things up. It's a no-no.
I would say Fred Allen was one of the greatest radio
comedians. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
He was topical. He was a master of satire. And he was amazing with an ad lib. You don't believe it. If you listen to Fred Allen's programs today, they're just as naturally they don't talk about the things that are relevant today, but they are as
immediate.
You're right. As they were in 1939 when he was doing Town Hall Tonight.
And his timing.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
It was beautiful.
You could just change some of the characters and some of the words and nail some of the people today.
Sure.
You know,
he loved to interview real people and give them a script loosely based on a real incident in their lives. He interviewed the fellow who had the lunch wagon on the Paramount lot in Hollywood.
He did?
And this guy's telling all about how he feeds Wallace Beery, you know, and what does this guy come in and eat? Leslie Nielsen, not Leslie Nielsen. Who was in Gone with the Wind? Leslie Howard. What does Leslie Howard eat? Well, he does this. And how about Clark Gable? Well, he smothers his hamburger in ketchup
mustard
or something
ketchup
like that.
Yeah.
He interviews a guy like this. He'll interview a fella who, the last, he interviewed a television tube glass. A glass tube blower or something like that, you know. And this is in 39 he's interviewing these people, you know. A television tube glass blower or something.
Way
like
ahead
that.
Of his time.
He's great. And his programs hold up 100%.
I wish he were on the air today. Can you imagine him on network TV today?
He'd destroy everybody.
He couldn't get along with TV, you know. He did do some early television.
Did he? I didn't remember that.
Yeah, they tried to, again, you see, the translation of your imagination to television doesn't work. He tried to do Alan's Alley on television with puppets. He had the voices. He had Peter Donald, Minerva Pius, Parker Fenley.
I know, but puppets would take the whole life out of the whole thing.
It didn't do it. It was no good. And he always, of course, he always was, he resented network vice presidents and any authority that came from television, you know. And he always bum-wrapped them. And he was a panelist on What's My Line for a while, too.
Didn't know
and,
that either.
He achieved greatness once in a while on that. But
WRSV, Skokie, Illinois. Del Clark at Jimmy Wong's North. where we hold forth nightly, 7 to 8. We're talking with noted... what do you call yourself, anyway? Collector of old-time radio programs?
I'd like to be a super fan. I'm a super
fan.
From the old radio program.
Chuck Shaden and one of Chicago's finest actresses, Dorothy Jordan. Chuck, Dorothy, either one of you, what future, if any, possibility do you see that someday radio might once again be what it was in the days of the soap operas, the Fred Allens? See any possibility of it happening except as a novelty right now?
Well, we can hope. I really don't know. I think maybe that pay television might move things in that direction.
I think that pay TV or this cable television that they're talking about may do the trick. Yet radio is not a visual medium.
No, thank God. You can have your own visuals.
That's exactly it. But you see, it doesn't come across so well. How do you put on a radio program on television? You can't. You know, if you ask, so you can ask me to sit and listen in my car to a radio program. I can sit and do, my wife can iron, you know, at home and listen to a radio show. But if you want to sit in your TV room and look at a screen with a picture of a radio on it or something and listen to the old program,
Chuck, I have to quarrel with you in one way. Now, I used to be a writer-producer in the commercial field. And based on my experience in that area, I must say to you that broadcast copy is broadcast copy. If it is alive and moving and vital and happening and real, then it is. It has to be something that you can do with the camera or with opticals that you lay in or with the physical presence of the people. It must be possible to make a situation happen. But I really don't feel that anything was made to happen or can be made to happen and be made believable in the medium of radio, which you only hear, which would not work.
You feel that radio, if we ever relive a radio, or if we get back into radio, that it will be on the television?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
You're saying, aren't you, that you just don't see any chance for this type of radio drama to capture the audience again?
No, I'm not saying that either. I think I've been very esoteric or something. I'm saying if it is alive, it will work in radio as well as on the tube.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I'm saying it is as vital with this one dimension as it is in an area where you also see it. Now, there are other factors involved, which I don't know whether or not we can cope with, and that is the client structure, the people who sponsor these things. They would like their products seen as well as heard about.
Well, but yes, there's an awful lot of, there's a big business in the radio
advertising.
There is a
big business in radio, and it is pitched toward the people who drive to and from work. And is generally in the area of the STP, the oil company, American Oil or Standard Oil or whatever oil company, the Chicago and Northwestern. You should ride the train instead of drive your car. You know, it's pitched to the market, which is driving to and from work, and the things they're interested in.
Well, you hear a heck of a lot of financial institutions on the radio.
Such as? Financial institutions.
Banks, savings
and
loans.
Well, sure. Put your money in the bank when you get it out of your, you get your paycheck. Go down to the bank, their bank.
Drive up, use the auto, drive up.
They all have drive-in windows.
But nevertheless, we do know that a lot of people do listen at home during the daytime to the radio or in the evening.
Sure, women doing housework.
Well, but would a woman doing housework give up listening to music on a radio to listen to a drama while she does the ironing?
I think she would.
I think so, too.
I think so, yes.
I really do think so.
And to really get specific in answering the question that you asked before about will we have a... Do we see whether or not there will be radio as we remember it coming up? I think yes. I can't say to the same degree, but there is an amazing interest in radio, especially the old programs, by young people today. I trade these tapes that I mentioned with a lot of people, and I trade with collectors of every age. There's a fellow who's 11 years old who has a large collection of old radio programs, and he never heard these shows. He was born in 1959. He's nuts on the shadow. You know, he can't get enough shadow. He loves the mysteries, and he likes these programs, this and that. And yet, all across the country, I trade with someone in Pango Pango and in San Sursi, Puerto Rico, and Canada, New York, Mexico, all around. And it's the same all over. There's no age barrier on this, but there is a great interest in this thing in people who are teenagers, college students. A fantastic guy writes a letter. He says, "I'm sorry I was late in getting these tapes over to you, but I had a complete... I just graduated from law school and I was working on my bar exam thing." And in between, he's dubbing shows, you see, because
yes.
He has a collection. The way this works, he has a collection of, let's say, Fred Allen programs, and I have a collection of Jack Benny shows. So we send each other a list of what we have, and I say, "I'll trade you 2 hours of Jack Benny for two of Fred Allen."
Two Jack Benny.
I'll raise you a Sky King trading card.
Right.
A signet ring, and you're in.
Right.
We run a little over here, but I have, Chuck, if you can answer a question for me in about 30 seconds or a minute. A, how do you research your material to know what announcer was on what program at what time, and where do you get a hold of these tapes outside of the trading market? You have to have something to start with to trade. If you got zero to start, you got nothing to trade.
Well, first of all, there are three or four good resource books that have been compiled by people who have a good solid background in radio, and that gives you a lot of information. It's not all accurate, and you do get the traders, the collectors, they each have their own little bits and pieces of information that they've gathered, and when somebody finds that this program has so-and-so as Captain Midnight and not the other guy. Ed Prentice was Captain Midnight and so was Paul Barnes. Well,
I know.
You have to know when Paul was Captain Midnight, when Ed Prentice was Captain Midnight. And if you can pinpoint that, you know one thing about this show. The shows often have clues in there. Get your 1940s Orphan Annie decoder, you know.
Yeah.
and so you pull that information together. And the other part of the question, where do you get this stuff?
Yeah, where do you start a collection?
Most collectors are collecting not to hoard, not to corner the market on radio, but to perpetuate the interest, preserve the good old shows. And if you don't have any radio shows and you'd like some of my collection, then let me know about it. And if you'll buy the tape, I'll support you and give you a few shows. And then maybe you can make a trade with somebody and then give me what you get. It gets very complex and complicated.
Great thing.
But I love old radio enough to say, I'll help you get started, you know.
It's so real.
You know, it's terrific.
Dorothy Jordan, lovely gal, actress. What are your own plans? What are you doing these days?
Well, what I'm doing basically is commercials and a few side interests, like writing and producing a few things, you know, talent tapes. Occasionally I do a few commercials or I do publicity for somebody. And I managed to stay alive that way.
Well, I hear your voice all over town on commercials, so you know it's going well for you.
It's doing very well. I like to do plays, but none of us can afford to do, you know, a terribly long run because we work all over, you know, town to town. And we can't get tied to something we can't go away from. Who can do a 39-week run, you know, unless you're making all the money there is?
Not unless it's on Broadway and it's $1,000 a week or
exactly.
Something like that.
Exactly, but I mean, you know, it's one of the outliers here. So that's basically what I do. It's the same kind of thing every day and every week, but I like it a lot.
So. It looks like it agrees with you.
Thank you.
Come back and see you soon.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Chuck, the carpet is going to be extended again soon because you can go on this old-time radio for hours and hours.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Talking with Dorothy Jordan, a beautiful femme fatale actress who lives in Barrington, Illinois, and writer, producer as well. And Chuck Shaden, a man who has expertise on old-time radio, and he's also press reporter, Journal Newspaper Group, the executive editor thereof. And if you are interested in old-time radio and would like to get in touch with Chuck, drop us a card, Del Clark, WRSV, Skokie, Illinois, and I'll see if the information gets passed along to Chuck. We have a station break to do, a commercial message, and we'll be right back with more conversations, and we'll be talking about home economics and all first of good things from General Foods. We'll be talking with Barbara McDonald in just a moment. Right now, back to the studio. And
wouldn't it be wonderful to drive a sleek new 1970 car without a worry in the world? You can, you know, when you deal with Seltzer Auto Leasing. At Seltzer, you get the car that fits your needs best. Just think, you can choose any make, any model, and just the color combination you like. Call Seltzer Auto Leasing. 777-5300. 777-5300. You'll find out why more people are leasing cars these days. And you'll wonder why you didn't think of doing it sooner. Don't wait. Call Seltzer. Pick your new 1970, any make, model, or color. You'll enjoy driving the Seltzer route. Dial 777-5300, 777-5300, for a new lease on life from Seltzer Auto Leasing, 5300 West Irving Park Road.
Have you heard the cavatine, another Telefunken product for discriminating radio listeners? The cavatine is a stereo tuner amplifier with a built-in stereo cassette tape recorder. It's fully transistorized with four bands, FM, AM, and two shortwave. The cavatine cassette is push-button operated, and you can record in stereo from any of the four radio bands with no jacking, or make your own voice tapes by simply plugging in a microphone. The Telefunken Cavatine has an input for your record player and an output for an auxiliary tape recorder. See the handsome Cavatine with a low silhouette and walnut trim with brushed aluminum. Ask your local dealer to play it through the L55 speaker, the shape of things to come in speakers. They're ball-shaped and spun aluminum and can be hung like a lamp. Try the Telefunken Cavatine for incomparable ear appeal. For information, phone 254-1777.
And now back for the second half of the show, sent your way live from Jimmy Wong's North on Peterson at Lincoln Avenue. Once again, we leave our studios.
Waiter almost dropped a tray on cue. Sorry you missed that exciting sound effect. Would have gotten back a second earlier, would have had it. Del Clark at Jimmy Wong's North Restaurant, Lincoln and Peterson, nightly Monday through Friday, 7 until 8 o'clock. And, of course, we're with you every morning for the Del Clark Wake Up Good Morning Radio Program. From 6 until 9, Char Stengel is our delightful, the lovely femme fatale. Yes, fatal. And she is our gal Friday tonight. Jello, everybody. That used to be the theme song of
fits
Jello.
Fits right into your old radio, doesn't
and
it?
And it fits right in with old-time radio. Let's welcome Mrs. Barbara McDonald, home economist for General Foods. And I know you know who General Foods are. Among other things, they make Jell-O.
That's right, and now they make Jell-O 1, 2, 3, which is not quite as well known, perhaps.
I got to describe this. You've got it in a glass here in front of
glass.
Me. And it's in about four different levels. It's a different colored Jell-O, it looks to me, in about four different ways.
Right, it's actually three layers. That's why the 1, 2, 3. But we have fruit in the bottom, which gives the appearance of a fourth layer. The trick here is that it does its own thing. You mix it just like Jell-O, and it separates out, as you can see, into three layers here. We have.
What do you do, put it in a centrifuge or something?
No. You do it in a mixer, and you beat it at high speed for 4 minutes, but other than that, it's just like your regular Jell-O that people are familiar with making. It has a creamy topping on top, and a fluffy chiffon in the middle, and a cool gelatin on the bottom.
And it's delicious.
Oh, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I'm having a little right here. Chuck Shaden. Nice. Have some Jell-O, Chuck.
Yes. There are lots of things you can do with it, and we have a little folder we can send your listeners if they'd like to write. Can I give you a address?
Yeah, I want to describe this. It's a very colorful, large family-looking folder. Would you tell us what's in it, Barbara?
It is. It's called a puzzle paper, and inside we have recipes for Jell-O 1, 2, 3. We have lots of fun and games for the family, puzzles that they can do, and some little jokes. Pictures. It makes a great poster if you've got a place to hang a poster in your home.
We're a poster nuts family. We like them in the basement and every place over.
Yeah, you can put this up and it'll keep you busy for a whole evening figuring out the answers to all these things. I'll give you the address now and then perhaps you can repeat it later.
Okay.
They write to Puzzle Paper, P.O. Box 650, Bradley, Illinois, and the zip is 60915.
Now, with that, you get the puzzle paper and many recipes for the use of
That's
1,
right.
2, 3.
Yes, it has some real goodies here, too. If you have a gourmet occasion to serve it, you can take, for instance, a cherry Jell-O 1, 2, 3 and substitute brandy for part of your cold water.
I knew there was something about you, Barbara, I liked.
And you put dark, sweet, pitted cherries at the bottom. And what you have is truly a gourmet thing. I think the ladies who are listening know that if you do a parfait the regular way, it takes many steps. You have to put your Jell-O in the refrigerator or gelatin mixture, let it set, then come back an hour later and do something else, and then come back another hour later and do something else. This is all done in one easy, quick step, and it's really very pretty.
How long has 1, 2, 3 been on the market?
It just came out this spring. It's now generally available, but it's only been out for a very short time. And the reason for this second phase that we're in right now is that many people are skeptical. This the folder itself is called, Are You a Skeptical People? And people doubt that it really will happen. You know, they look at this thing and it looks pretty, but they think, oh, it may be hard or, you know, maybe won't do. So we're saying if you're skeptical, this is your chance to find out.
Eating this, I'm not eating a prop that you're going to use on TV on somebody's show yet tonight, am I?
Not tonight. You go right ahead.
I had a morning TV show on Channel 5. We did that quite by mistake one morning. We were very hungry. And we had a representative of one of the food companies on, and we ate the props before the show.
Oh, it must have really been a good...
Oh, well, that went over very big.
Yeah, but what better advertisement? If it's good enough to eat, it's got to be good enough to try.
What you have to do, just buy the goodies at the store, the Jell-O 1, 2, 3, which is in the same department as all the other Jell-Os, I suppose.
Yes, that's right.
And then you go home and you... What do you do from there?
Well, any lady who's made Jell-O, or gentlemen, or even the children can make Jell-O 1, 2, 3. You just mix it together. It has instructions here for beating at high speed for 4 minutes. Put it in the refrigerator, and it does its own thing.
How does it separate like that? Is that a company secret?
I think it's a company secret, but evidently there are things of different weights in there so that the density or whatever, the things settle out so that you get these three layers.
That's a pretty good dessert for this time of year, isn't it?
Right,
the hot weather and everything like that.
Yeah, it's going to be better. And it's a little bit lower calorie than some of the other cold things that we like to eat, so that helps too.
What other products has Jell-O got besides the traditional things today? Anything new and exciting besides 1, 2, 3?
Of the new things right now, I think this is the major one they're talking about. Of course, the whole Bird's Eye line of frozen foods is part of General Foods as well, and it's just really a very large organization of many, many products.
They've been around for a long time.
That's right. And I'm glad that you remember that old theme song. I think that's fun.
Oh, yeah, that goes back a while, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's one of the all-time greats, I guess, of a radio commercial.
I wonder why they don't break it out and use it again.
I don't know. I think that would be interesting to bring it out. And certainly I remember it. Maybe others do, too, from the past.
Barbara, what do you do as a home economist? Do you travel for General Foods?
I'm based in Chicago.
Sure.
And at this time, General Foods is using home economists in each city where they're doing their introduction. And I just happen to be the local representative here. But this works out very well because I have a family, three little boys, and it really wouldn't work too well to be traveling around the country and doing other things.
What basically does... I've had home economists on the show several times, but I've never really asked this question. What does a home economist do?
Well, there's so many things. It's probably kind of a hard question to answer. What I'm doing is promotion, of course. I'm here with you, and we're telling the public. It's communicating. But there are so many phases. There is the recipe development. There's writing. This little copy that you see on the Jell-O box here, some home economist has written this, hopefully to make it easier for the homemaker at home to do that. The picture that you see here, some home economist no doubt had a hand in preparing this and making it look attractive. Research and development, promotion, testing, spreading the word, I guess, would sort of cover the area.
What do you have to have? What kind of a background goes into the making of a home economist?
A degree in home economics, and there are a number of good schools. I'm from Iowa State myself, but there are many right here in the state of Illinois. Champaign has an excellent home economics school. Purdue is great. Minnesota, Wisconsin, they all have fine home ec schools.
Are there any men in the field?
More in the hotel, restaurant, institution line. I think the food service probably is where you would find more of the men. Now, it could have been a man who invented this little process. Food technology is a big field for men, and often this is where you'll find them. I think the courses that are required don't always appeal for two men, like the clothing construction that you have to take for a home ec degree does not always appeal to the man who might want to go into restaurant management or something like that.
Would you advise any young lady going through college to take any courses or a few in home economics just to help her with family? And
I think it's a great field. It really is. It's something like nursing, you know, that you can have a job for a while, then you can get married and put it to very good use. And like I'm doing, sort of combining both a career and a home. But it certainly is good to have some basics in home economics. I feel even at the lower grades, this is very good because of the girls who may not finish school. This is something that you're always going to be doing, is preparing food and taking care of a family, and it's just helpful to have.
Laying out a home and a schedule and feeding the family is not an easy thing to do today at all. I wonder, do you think that people coming out of school are really prepared for suddenly being thrust into the responsibility of running a home? A woman, I'm thinking in particular now.
Right. Well, I think it must be easier than it was years ago when they didn't have the appliances and things that we have today. But you are right. It takes a certain amount of management skill to be able to keep all these things going at the same time. It helps a great deal to have the convenience foods that we have today. Things like this. You know, you could serve this at a party, but it takes like 10 minutes to prepare. And I think that today we're luckier than ever before because we have so many things that are prepared for us and are ready to take home and serve.
Does it bother you as a home economist to use extensively what you can call lightly convenience foods? I know this extends to many things, but do you get as much nutrition from the
real
meat and potatoes type of stuff that are prepared that way?
Yes, I'm sure you do. In fact, so many things are fortified that I sometimes wonder if we don't get, you know, several times what we really need in all of our fortified breads and things that have the goodies added to it. That I'm not worried about things being stripped out if that's what you're suggesting, that in the preparation some of the good things are lost. I don't feel that's the case. But we are lucky in having it. You have a choice this way. For instance, with our Jell-O 1-2-3, you can serve it as is. It's a very quick, easy thing. Or you can add your own little touches and make it your own. But at least you have the choice. In the old days, you didn't. You had to do it from scratch, and it had to take several hours to prepare a meal.
Do you have any thoughts or any advice for people who are having budgetary problems trying to feed a family this day and age, and prices in supermarkets being what they are?
Yes, I think we're all struggling with that one. I think watching the newspaper ads is a very good idea, following up the specials, planning ahead. This is where most people fall down. They go in and they see all these interesting things, and if you don't have a good self-control, you may end up with a market basket full of things that are not so essential. This is why I try to leave my children at home when I grocery shop. But if you can make a plan and know what you're going to have and really stick to it, have an idea of what you want to spend when you go in, this is the most helpful thing.
The worst thing, I guess, you can do is to go shopping if you're hungry.
That's what I've heard.
But you load up that market basket in a hurry.
These days, it's fun to go to the store just to keep cool. I went shopping this afternoon. I thought, gee, what a lovely way to spend an afternoon. You know, you could just sort of go in and take your time.
I got to tell you, though, from a man's standpoint, women, don't send your husband to the supermarket.
Really?
Not like I went today, get chicken. How can you goof up that? I got the wrong kind, you know.
You mean you got drumsticks instead of something else, or?
I got too many of the wrong other parts, not the drumsticks, you know.
All breasts, or?
Something like that. And it was not a fryer, and it should have been, and
this is a problem. You
know,
there's
you,
so much choice.
You look in the freezing thing there, and it says chicken, and you grab it, you know.
Yeah.
But
right.
it's not, and then you hunt for one little item. Now this is I'm just talking what a man goes through.
Right?
Maybe
right.
Women do too. I don't know.
No, I think that the wife has to be prepared to accept what comes home if she sends her husband. You know, there is so much there and so many possibilities for coming home with what you didn't plan on. That
I
be
guess.
Very flexible.
Barbara, I wonder if once again you'd be kind enough to give
sure
the
would.
Address. Now, first of all, let me say that 1-2-3 is an exotic new product by Jell-O that I've just eaten, that Barbara was kind enough to bring along. So so we had some of the stage props here tonight, and it develops itself into all sorts of flavors, but on three or four different levels.
Well, it's only one flavor in one package, but it does develop into three layers, so it's the appearance that you get. That...
And it's good-looking, great for parties, mm-hmm. as well as after dinner. And takes only 10 minutes to make, and is very easy. And you also have, along with it, a chart called Are You Skeptical People? Skeptical people are show-me people. They don't easily believe, and on and on. It opens up about four different times into poster size, and it's done in several different colors, orange, yellow, and so on. It's a very cute little fold-out gimmick, and mm-hmm. it includes, among other things, some fantastic recipes.
Right.
And I wonder, Barbara, if you just kind of highlight one recipe for us and then give the address that you'd like any inquiries mailed mm-hmm. to.
If we can mention hard liquor, there's one here called Jubilant Cherries, which is a gourmet-type thing that you can do in a big hurry. You start with a can of dark, sweet, pitted cherries, and you save the syrup and substitute part of the syrup for the cold water. And you add one tablespoon of brandy and cold water to syrup. So there you have your little gourmet touch. You place the cherries in the bottom of the glasses, which should be clear, of course, so that you can see the layering. You make the Jell-O 1-2-3 according to the instructions on the box, pour it in, and you wait 10 minutes while it layers. It just does it itself while you stand there.
And you don't have to do anything.
That's right. And when it has layered, you put it in the refrigerator, and in 3 hours, once it sets up, it's ready to serve. So there are a number of ideas. There are five flavors. Did we mention?
We didn't.
Cherry, raspberry, strawberry, orange, and lime. Were those the five flavors? They used to say, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
Boy, that you got me. J-E-L-L.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right.
That's Henry Aldrich. I don't really remember.
Yeah, I think it might have been five delicious flavors. But anyway, this is what we do have now in Jell-O 1-2-3. And it's just so easy to do. One little idea here. Do I have time for another?
Yeah, yeah.
This you do with a cantaloupe, and you split it open and scoop out the center and mix up your Jell-O 1-2-3 according to package instructions and pour it into the melon to set up in there. Then at serving time, you slice them, and what you end up is a wedge of cantaloupe with the Jell-O 1-2-3, the little layers in here, and it's really a very attractive summertime dessert.
Sounds fantastic. Now, how do we get this this fold-up poster in multicolors with all these ideas and suggestions for the use of Jell-O 1-2-3?
You write Puzzle Papers, Box 650, Bradley, Illinois. Bradley is B-R-A-D-L-E-Y, Illinois, and the zip is 60915.
Well, Barbara, I want to thank you so much for talking to us about 1-2-3 by Jell-O.
Thank you.
And please keep us posted on what's going on in the world of General Foods, and come back and see us soon.
Thank you, Del.
Talking with the noted, nationally famous home economist, this is Barbara McDonald, and she is representing General Foods' new product, Jell-O 1-2-3, and it separates into three different layers, so you put it in a nice, clear glass container and serve it, and available to you right now, a little poster-like called Are You a Skeptical People, which includes several recipes that can use the 1-2-3. If you'd like that, I'll be very happy to send it to you. Just write Puzzle Papers, as it's called, Box 650, Bradley, Illinois, and the zip code is 60915. Sherry, you ought to try some of this 1-2-3 Jell-O that's here
I've
in front
made
of
it already at have home,
you?
Yes.
Way
My
ahead
daughter
of all
loves
of it.
It.
You say all the right things,
doggone
it. Nice to have you here tonight.
I bought it yesterday at the Jewel. I bought the orange flavored.
Ah, well, you never thought about bringing any down here to good old Al Clark and showing us how good a cook you were, did you?
I'm a terrible cook. In fact, I blew this the first time I made it.
Yeah,
the 1-2-3.
Impossible.
I put it in the ulsterizer, and you're not supposed to. It doesn't separate the right way unless you use a mixer. So there I was with one layer.
You know, I heard a radio announcer make a terrible mistake. He told everybody to go out and buy themselves an ostracizer.
An ostracizer?
He meant to say osterizer, but it came out being an ostracizer. You don't even have to buy those things.
No.
Anyway, you're here in a lovely gownless evening strap tonight, and a beautiful suntan to go along with it, so...
Thank you.
It's 8 o'clock, WRSV, Skokie, Illinois. Can you say everything?
101.9.
Right. Transmitter atop the Kemper Insurance Building in downtown Chicago. Del Clark at Jimmy Wong's North, Monday through Friday, 7 to 8. Char Stangle, our lovely gal Friday, is about to give us a rundown
on Who Is With Whom in Jimmy Wong's Tonight.
No, I won't do that tonight. But Jennifer Wagner is celebrating her second birthday on the 3rd of July.